ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Hare Krishna. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 15. Chapter 15 is entitled King Prithu's Appearance and Coronation. And today we are on text 19. Natyam Sugitam Vaditram. Natyam Sugitam Vaditram. Antardhanam chakhe charaha. Antardhanam chakhe charaha. Rishayastashisha satyaha. Rishayastashisha satyaha. Samudra shankham atmajam. Samudra shankham atmajam. Natyam sugitam sugitam vaditram. Antardhanam chakhe charaha. Rishayascha shisha satyaha. Samudra shankham atmajam. Natyam sugitam vaditram. Antardhanam chakhe charam. Rishayascha shisha satyaha. Samudra shankham atmajam. Natyam. The art of drama. Sugitam, the art of singing sweet songs. Vaditram, the art of playing musical instruments. Antardhanam, the art of disappearing. Cha, also. Khechara, demigods traveling in outer space. Rishayaha, the great sages. Cha, also. Ashisha, blessings. Satya, infallible. Samudra, the demigod of the ocean. Shankham, conch shell. Atmajam, produced from himself. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The demigods who always travel in outer space gave King Prithu the arts to perform dramas, sing songs, play musical instruments and disappear at his will. The great sages also offered him infallible blessings. The ocean offered him a conch shell produced from the ocean. There is no purport, so we'll go to the next verse. I'll just read the translation of verse 20. The seas, mountains and rivers gave him room to drive his chariot without impediments. And a Suta, a Magadha and a Vandi offered prayers and praises. They all presented themselves before him to perform their respective duties. No purport for this one as well. Text 21. Thus, when the greatly powerful King Prithu, the son of Vena, saw the professionals before him, to congratulate them he smiled. And with the gravity of the vibrating sounds of clouds, he spoke as follows. Verse 22. King Prithu said, O gentle Suta, Magadha and other devotee offering prayers, the qualities of which you have spoken are not distinct in me. Why then should you praise me for all these qualities when I do not shelter these features? I do not wish for these words meant for me to go in vain, but it is better they be offered to someone else. Purport. The prayers and praises by the Sutta, Magadha and Vandi all explain the godly qualities of Maharaj Prithu, for he was a Shakti Avesha incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the qualities were not yet manifest, however, King Prithu very humbly asked why the devotee should praise him with such exalted words. He did not want anyone to offer him prayers or glorify him unless he possessed the real qualities of which they spoke. The offering of prayers was certainly appropriate, for he was an incarnation of Godhead, but he warned that one should not be accepted as an incarnation of the personality of Godhead without having the godly qualities. At the present moment, there are many so-called incarnations of the personality of Godhead, but these are merely fools and rascals whom people accept as incarnations of God, although they have no godly qualities. King Prithu desired that his real characteristics in the future might justify such words of praise. Although there was no fault in the prayers offered, Prithu Maharaj indicated that such prayers should not be offered to an unfit person who pretends to be an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So this chapter is entitled King Prithu's Appearance and Coronation. In this chapter, we see in the beginning of the chapter, the sages who were very concerned that there was no fit ruler to rule the kingdom after they killed King Vena with mantras and all that, because he was an unfit king. There were rogues, thieves, everything had become very prominent in the kingdom, and they were quite concerned about the welfare of the citizens. So then they decided that yes, there should be a ruler, a fit ruler which has to lead the citizens. So they started churning the body of King Vena, which his mother had preserved very carefully. And a few personalities came out. And in this chapter, at the beginning, we see that when they churned the arms of King Vena, then there were two divine personalities which appeared. One was Prithu Maharaj and the other was his eternal consort Archi. And as soon as the sages saw these personalities appear, they actually realized that these are none other than partial incarnations of the Lord. So they realized that King Prithu is a partial incarnation of Vishnu and Archi is an expansion of the goddess of fortune. So once they realized that, they wanted to praise the king appropriately, give him lots of gifts and also coronate him as soon as possible. So we see in the beginning that the coronation ceremony of King Prithu happens, and before they do that, Brahma comes down to verify and to confirm to the sages present that this is indeed a Shakti Avesha Avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how does Brahma do that? He does that by checking the symbols on the hands and feet of Prithu Maharaj. And he sees those divine symbols, the conch shell, the disc, thunderbolt, all these divine symbols he sees. And he confirms that this indeed is a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So having this assurance, the sages become very enlivened and they want to immediately coronate the king. So they actually then make them, they coronate King Prithu and Queen Archi as the king and queen at that time. And once they've coronated them as the king, various personalities from all over the universe start coming to offer their prayers, their blessings and also various gifts to Prithu Maharaj. So over the last few verses, we have been seeing that how the first demigod to come was Kuvera. He offers a golden throne to Prithu Maharaj. Then Varuna comes. He offers an umbrella which could spray fine mist of cooling water, and it was as brilliant as the moonshine. So all these different gifts are offered by the various demigods. Vishnu himself comes and he gives the Sudarshan disc to Prithu Maharaj. Lord Shiva gives him some gifts. In fact, he's also given some mystic slippers by which he can travel anywhere in space, like be at places at his will. So all these gifts have been given to him. And from this verse we see that now the professional reciters have come. And these professional reciters are called as the Magadhas, the Vandis and the Sutas. So when we say professional reciters, so during those times, they had these sect of people as well in the society who were trained to become proficient in offering praises and prayers to exalted personalities. So that was actually their duty, or it was actually their job. Wherever an auspicious occasion is going on or some exalted personality is there, they would come and compose suitable prayers and then sing those suitable prayers in a very poetic manner. In fact, in the olden days, we also had a profession where there were professional criers as well. So whenever there was somebody who had died in a family, or there was a funeral or something like that, these professional people would be invited to cry on the occasion. And I was just thinking on this and dwelling, and I was thinking that, you know, for how long can someone keep crying when somebody has departed? There are so many people who come to visit, and every time, you know, somebody comes to visit and pay their condolences, it is expected that that family member will cry. But every human beings have a limit for how long they can keep crying. So they used to have these professional people who used to come to just cry. In fact, in Bollywood, there was a famous movie also called Rudali, which had come a few years ago, where it was about this only, how professional people go and cry. They were trained to actually cry on the spot, even though that family, they had nothing to do with that person who had passed away, but they could actually cry and, you know, create that ambience where, yes, something, you know, inauspicious has happened or somebody has passed away and there is a somber mood. So they were trained in that art. So in the same way, these professionals have been trained to praise exalted personalities. And they have come now and they have started offering various praises to King Prithu. But Maharaj Prithu is giving us important lessons. And we will see now the chapter is going to come to an end in a few verses. He gives us important lessons on what do we learn from these professional prayers which are given by these personalities. So the first lesson that comes across is Maharaj Prithu's humility. He's saying in the translation as well as in the purport Prabhupada writes, he says that why are you praising me with all these qualities when I have not yet manifested them? I don't possess them yet, or I have not yet shown these qualities. So then why are you praising me for all these qualities? I am undeserving of all these praises, and I'm undeserving of these qualities which you are mentioning about me. So it brings out the humility of Maharaj Prithu. Even though he is the Shakti Avesha Avatar, he is still not accepting these praises. And Prabhupada says that actually these Magadhas, the Vandis and the Sutas were right in praising him. Because he is an incarnation of the Lord. He does possess all these godly qualities. But Maharaj Prithu was setting an example by showing his humility in this case. Another important lesson which Maharaj Prithu is teaching us through his actions and through discouraging these professional reciters from praising him is actually an important lesson for the people of Kali Yuga. So he is saying that let these qualities be manifest in me, and it's only foolish people who will accept these qualities when they don't possess them. And Prabhupada says that in Kali Yuga especially, there are so many so-called incarnations or pseudo-incarnations who claim to be God. And there are foolish people who they surround themselves with all these people who will, you know, praise them and say, oh, you are the Lord, you have all these qualities. And they will put them on the throne and declare that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prithu Maharaj is warning. He's saying, don't attribute godly qualities to a person who is not an incarnation of the Lord. Don't do this, because then innocent people are cheated into this, because there are so many followers, foolish people who praise this person, and this person is also a rascal who starts agreeing and starts accepting this praise and thinking that yes, if so many people are claiming yes, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then foolish people get cheated because they see so many people are following, oh, I should also follow, and oh yeah, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what Prithu Maharaj and even Prabhupada are warning us against, that do not praise people unnecessarily who are not having godly qualities, who are not an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. In fact, there was one such pseudo-incarnation who had come to meet Prabhupada once. And Prabhupada actually challenged him in his usual challenging style. Prabhupada would really cut across these people. So Prabhupada told him that, why are you claiming to be the Lord? The Lord's incarnations are all scheduled and they are all mentioned in the scriptures. And there is no incarnation which is scheduled around this time. So why are you claiming that you are the Supreme Lord? And that person told Prabhupada, he had the audacity. He is telling that, I am not claiming that I am the Lord. Have you ever heard me saying this in any lecture or anything like that? It is my followers who are claiming that I am the Lord. And this is exactly what Prithu Maharaj is addressing over here in this purport and in this translation. He is saying that unnecessarily don't praise people. And those people who accept such praises are actually foolish and rascals. So Prabhupada again cut through to this person, and Prabhupada told him, he said that if they are praising you or they are calling you the Lord, is it not your duty to correct them and to correct the general public by saying that no, I'm not the Lord? And Prabhupada was quite strict about this. In Leelamrita it is said that someone had once asked Prabhupada that, are you the Lord or are you an avatar or incarnation or a Shakti Avesha avatar of the Lord? And Prabhupada roared like a lion. And Prabhupada said that, no, I am not God. I am actually Krishna's dog. So Prabhupada would always, take that position. He would even cut across, because Prabhupada's fame had spread so much by the time Prabhupada was still in the planet, because he had opened so many temples. The movement was really spreading quite well all over the world. So there were many people who would have easily accepted Srila Prabhupada as the Lord. But Prabhupada would never have anything to do like that. He would cut across and be very heavy with anyone or even any disciple who would even give such a hint. He would make it outright clear that he is not the Lord and he is just Krishna's dog who has come to serve him and spread his holy names and take part in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So we see that even, Devamrit Maharaj was talking about this a few days ago. There is one more person who did that. And his mention is there in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that was none other than Pondraka. So we just recently studied that chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam with Keshav Prabhu's Bhaktivedanta classes. And Pondraka actually was surrounded by people who started telling him that, oh, you are the real Vasudev. You have all these insignia of Vasudev. And he actually started, believing that he is the Supreme Lord. He is Vasudev. And then because of that belief, he sent a message to Krishna in Dwarka saying that you are a false incarnation and you should give up all your false insignia, give up your conch shell, give up all your weapons, your Sudarshan disc, and accept me as the Supreme Lord. He sends a messenger like that. And over there, and like Devamrit Maharaj was explaining, that this is just nothing but foolishness. There were people whom he had surrounded himself with, Pondraka, who were giving him some cheap praises. And he was getting those cheap thrills out of it, and he actually started believing that he is the Supreme Lord. And obviously Krishna took a heavy hand, because he wanted to establish, and even for people in Kali Yuga he wanted to establish, that do not allow people to get accepted as the Supreme Lord when they are not. So he actually killed him. He went to do the battle with him and he actually killed Pondraka. So we see that these important lessons which Prithu Maharaj is teaching us through this pastime, he is teaching us about humility and he is teaching us how not to accept someone as an incarnation of the Lord, and how people should also not praise someone unnecessarily unless they have been mentioned in the scriptures as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So for the next remaining of the class, there are lots of important auspicious personalities, disappearance day and auspicious occasions today. So we'll dwell on that. And one such personality is Murari Gupta, whose disappearance day is today. And he was also an emblem of humility. Like Prithu Maharaj showed humility in this verse, he was also an emblem of humility. So we'll speak a little bit about Murari Gupta. Today is also the most auspicious Kartik Purnima. So it is on this auspicious day that the Sharadiya Rasyatra, the Rasleela, took place, which is the main Rasleela in Bhagavatam. There is one spring Rasleela also that happens, but the Rasleela which is mentioned in Bhagavatam actually happens on this day. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well, and also the importance of Kartik month, because Damodarmas actually starts from Purnima, but offering of candles we do from Pratipat. So that we will start tomorrow, but actually Kartik mass, the Damodarmas starts today from Purnima. So speaking about Murari Gupta, he was an intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had appeared, he was a few years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he had taken an intimate, he had taken part in all the intimate pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during his Nadia Leela, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there in Nadia. So Murari Gupta was a disciple of Chandrasekhar Acharya. And along with Shivanand Sen, Chandrasekhar Acharya, Murari Gupta, they all were born in Srihatta, which is a very, it's considered a holy dham because so many personalities took birth over there. And when he was a few years old, his parents moved to Nadia, to Navadvip, and they came to live in the neighborhood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or Nimai Pandit as he was called at that time. So he was just a few years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that is why they were classmates. They used to go to school together, and they were friends. And Nimai Pandit had not yet manifested his pastimes of being the Lord, or of showing that he has come to spread the glories of the holy name. So he was more of a scholar and a grammarian, a person who would like to debate. And he was well known in Navadvip for his debates on logic, on grammar, on shastras. So he could defeat anybody easily in debates. And Murari Gupta and Nimai Pandit used to have lots of friendly debates. Mm-hmm. And obviously Murari Gupta could never defeat Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then what Murari Gupta, because they were friends, he would resort to slinging, like hitting and slinging with each other. And in fact, many times they would do that. They would be hitting each other because Murari Gupta lost in the debate and he would still not accept the defeat. And by like this, they would go till the Ganga. And it is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that while fighting like this over who won the debate and who's the scholar and all that, they would stir up so much mud in the Ganga that the ladies were not able to fill water in their pots because there was so much mud on the banks of the Ganga. And the Brahmins couldn't take bath because, again, you know, there was mud on the banks of the Ganga. So they also went to the same school. When Nimai Pandit started going to school, to the school of Gangadas Pandit, they both went to the same school. And Nimai Pandit immediately, as soon as he joined school, he started coming first in his class, in grammar, logic, shastras, everything he used to top the class. And he used to always challenge everyone to debates once again. And all the other students would easily accept defeat and they would declare Nimai Pandit as the winner. But Murari Gupta would neither engage in debate with him nor would he accept him as the winner. So Nimai Pandit would get very angry with him. And again, this was all very friendly banter. He would get angry with him and he would tell Murari Gupta, because Murari Gupta came from a family of physicians. So he would tell him that you are an Ayurvedic doctor. You have come in the family of physicians. Your duty is to cure all the sick and all the diseased people. What are you doing over here in this grammar school? You go to the forest, collect some herbs and leaves and roots and go and cure people of their mucus, bile, dyspepsia, all that. That is your only duty. So don't engage in grammar and logic and all that with me. So he used to prick Murari Gupta like that because Murari Gupta would not engage in any debates with him. But when he said like that, Murari Gupta became very, his anger got pricked. So he said, okay, I'm going to debate with you on grammar because I'm a scholar in grammar. That's what Murari Gupta was thinking. So they had a debate and very easily Nimai Pandit defeated Murari Gupta in that debate. And not only he defeated him, he also, Murari Gupta was amazed because there were 2-3 people who then started having a debate together. And everyone together, Nimai Pandit could single-handedly debate and defeat. So Murari Gupta was astonished and he was actually saying, he was saying that how can a mortal possess such qualities, so much of logic and so much of scholarship? How can it be there, all these qualities in one mortal person? And he concluded that definitely this is not a mere mortal human being like us. He's definitely a divine personality. And he was so astonished that Nimai Pandit just placed his hand on him. And when his hand, you know, Nimai Pandit's cooling hand touched Murari Gupta, he was filled with ecstatic love. All ecstatic symptoms started manifesting in him just by the touch of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he realized, you know, his belief got affirmed that this is not an ordinary mortal. He's actually a divine personality. He must be an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, they had lots of childhood pastimes together. And Murari Gupta, even though he had come to take part in Nadia Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was an ardent devotee of Lord Ram. And even though while intimately associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while intimately having all these pastimes and taking part in his Leelas, he still would not give up his worship of Lord Ram. He was such an ardent devotee of Lord Ram. So once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to test him, so he actually called him and he said that, Murari Gupta, you are associating so intimately with me and you are seeing that I'm spreading. This was after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back from Gaya and he had started manifesting his pastimes as the Supreme Lord or a devotee of the Lord who has come to spread the holy names. So he actually calls him and says that, I have come to spread the holy name of Lord Krishna. And why are you worshipping Lord Ram all the time? You should also take to the worship of Krishna, like all these other associates are doing. And in this way, he convinced Murari Gupta. And Murari Gupta had so much intense devotion for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he could never refuse him. So in his mind, there was a dilemma. But he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yes, my Lord, if you're telling me like this, I will definitely start worshipping Lord Krishna. So Murari Gupta went home that night. And he was dwelling on his instructions. But he could not give up the worship of Lord Ram. Whole night he could not sleep. He was just tossing, turning. At the prospect that he is being asked to give up his worshipable Lord Ram and take up the worship of Krishna. And you know, he knew the tattva. He knew that both are the same. Lord Ram and Lord Krishna is the same. But he was so attached to the form of Lord Ram that he could not then divert his worship or his devotion to Lord Krishna. So in the next day morning, he came back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he told him that, my Lord, I have failed in following your instructions. I tried really hard to start worshipping the form of Lord Krishna, but I could not give it up. So what do I do now? I'm not able to follow your instructions, but at the same time, I'm also not able to give up the worship of Lord Ram. What should I do? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just, told him that this was just a test for you, Murari Gupta. And he revealed his true form to him. He said that you are none other than Hanuman. And being Hanuman, how can you give up the worship of Lord Ram? And this is exactly what I want from devotees, that they do not divert their worship. If they are attached to a certain form of the Lord, even though the other form is the same Lord, they do not divert their worship to that form. And they are very loyal to the form which has taken root in their heart. They keep worshipping that form. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then gave him that assurance that you keep worshipping your worshipable Lord Ram. On another occasion, Murari Gupta was at his home again worshipping Lord Ram, Lakshman and Sita. And at that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu suddenly came roaring into his house. And sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would do that. He would take on different moods of different incarnations. Once he took up the mood of Narasimha Dev, when Chand Kazi was causing trouble. This time when he came to Murari Gupta's house, he had taken on the mood of Varaha Dev. So he came roaring like Varaha Dev into Murari Gupta's house. And he told him, "Oh Murari Gupta, behold this form of mine, this divine form of mine as Varaha Dev. It is I who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and all these incarnations actually come from me." And he took up a water pot which was lying in Murari Gupta's house and he placed this on his teeth, enacting the pastime of Varahadev placing the earth back in its orbit. And he said that, "Behold this form, and anybody who actually does any aparad to my devotees, I do not spare them, even if they are my own son. And just as I did not spare Narakasura, who was Varahadev's son, born through his contact with Bhumi Devi." So he said that just as I did not spare Narakasura, I will not spare anybody who will do any harm to my devotees or who has any malicious intentions for my devotees in their heart. So when he gave this darshan, Murari Gupta immediately paid obeisances. And he was awestruck at being given this opportunity to take this darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Varahadev. And during the Mahaprakash Leela also, the Leela which went on for 21 hours in Shriva Sangam, during that Leela also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was calling different devotees and he was blessing them, giving them darshan of various forms which the devotee wanted to see. So in that mood he even calls Murari Gupta. And he calls him and he tells him that, O Murari Gupta, behold this form which you have always been worshipping. And come and worship me. And sitting on that throne, he actually shows him the form of Lord Ram. He suddenly appears as Lord Ram with Durvaghra skin color, like green color. And next to him was Lakshman standing with a bow and arrow. And seated next to him was Sita Mata on a throne. And Murari Gupta, he also showed the vision to Murari Gupta that there were hundreds and thousands of monkey soldiers behind him. And Murari Gupta could see his own form as Hanuman standing amongst those monkey soldiers. And when Murari Gupta beheld this divine darshan, he actually fainted in ecstasy. And again Chaitanya Mahaprabhu roared as Lord Ram. He said, O Murari Gupta, get up, worship me. Don't you know you have to go and rescue Mother Sita and give my message to Mother Sita? Come, get up and do this activity for which you had taken birth. So like this roaring and reminding Hanuman or Murari Gupta of his divine pastimes, he brings Murari Gupta out of his ecstasy and out of his unconscious state. And then Murari Gupta, when he wakes up from this unconscious state, he sees that he actually had a tail behind. So this is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him darshan and once again revealed to him that his real form is that of Hanumanji. And how, you know, he has to render all these services, and he did render all these services to him when he had incarnated as Lord Ram. And once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting on a regal throne in Shriva Sangam once again, and he was Narhari Sarkar was fanning him nicely, and Shivanand Sen was offering him tambula or betel nut pan, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually eating that pan nicely, and Murari Gupta came there and he offered obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as soon as he finished offering obeisances, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took some of the betel nut out of his mouth, that pan, and he gave it to Murari Gupta. So Murari Gupta immediately partook of that Mahaprasad, which has directly come out of the Lord's mouth. And then he wiped his hand all over his body. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately chastised Murari Gupta. He told him that, O Murari Gupta, what have you done? Don't you know that this is offal? Offal means moochi. It has come out of my mouth. So anything which touches the mouth, it actually becomes moochi. So today you have become completely moochi by spreading this tambul all over your body. Why did you do this? Now you'll have to go home and take a bath. And then Murari Gupta tells the Lord. He says that, first of all, I got to partake of your Mahaprasad, which directly came out of your mouth. And O Lord, anything which comes out of your mouth, any part of your body, whether it is, the spit or anything which comes out of your body, is still Mahaprasad. It is still non-different from you. And it is still as purifying as your holy name and as your presence and your darshan. Then how can I be moochi? How can this be considered as offal? I have actually become purified. And I have actually gained so much ecstatic love by just spreading this offal on my body. And we see a similar thing when Rishabhdev had appeared in this world. So it is said that when Rishabhdev, who is also an incarnation of the Lord, when he used to pass stool, when he used to answer nature's call, his, like for us, we always get a bad smell, and it's really in Bombay especially, if you go, there's so many people doing it on the streets as well or near the railway tracks, and it gives an awful smell. But when Rishabhdev used to do that activity, the fragrance of his stool would spread for miles and miles and miles. So again, you know, establishing the fact that anything which comes out from the Lord's body is still non-different from the Lord himself, and it is still very purifying. And that is a principle which Murari Gupta was establishing over here. And once Murari Gupta came to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and even Lord Nityananda was sitting next to him. So he pays obeisances first to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he pays obeisances to Lord Nityananda. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised Murari Gupta. He said that you are actually not following the right etiquette, Murari Gupta. Why did you pay obeisances to me first? And Murari Gupta said that, my Lord, I have followed the right etiquette. It is what you have inspired me to do in my heart. That is what I have done. How is it that I have not followed this etiquette? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that it will be revealed to you shortly what is the right etiquette to do. And that night, when Murari Gupta went to sleep, he had a divine dream. And in that divine dream, he saw Lord Nityananda. He saw that Lord Nityananda was wearing a cloth and that was tied backwards on his head, like wrestlers tie a cloth on their head. And he had a plough and a club, and there was Ananta Sesh which was following him, covering his head. So Murari Gupta in a sense was getting the darshan of Lord Nityananda as Lord Balaram. And when he saw that darshan, he actually realized what is the eternal position of Lord Nityananda. And following this darshan, there was Vishwambar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, coming with a peacock feather on his head. So he realized the eternal position of Lord Nityananda as Lord Balaram. And the next day he went to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that time he first paid obeisances to Lord Nityananda. And he sought forgiveness from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. And he said that, yes, I've realized the true position. And I know that without getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda, it is not possible to get your mercy, my Lord. So he was establishing that for all, you know, for people of all ages to come, that worship Lord Nityananda if we want to get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And people who don't recognize Lord Nityananda's eternal unique position as Lord Balaram and as being non-different from Krishna are actually doing a great aparad to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was so ecstatic, and in this ecstasy, after he pays obeisances, he goes back home and his devoted wife serves him some prasad. And he was still in that ecstasy of serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he kept taking handfuls of that rice which was mixed with ghee, and he kept putting it in the ground next to him. And he kept saying, eat this, eat this, eat this. And most of the rice he was putting like that on the ground next to him. And his wife was also a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So she immediately realized what was going on. And she told Murari Gupta, she said that you have fed him enough now. Now you also partake of some rice. So then being pacified like this by his wife, he also took some prasad and he went to sleep. And then the next day morning, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. Early morning he came to visit Murari Gupta at his house. And he cried out from outside, oh Murari, open the door. And when Murari Gupta saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately paid obeisances. And he was astonished that the Lord has come to see him so early in the morning. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Murari Gupta. He said that, because Murari Gupta asked him, my Lord, what has brought you here so early in the morning? So he said, you're asking me like that. Yesterday night you only fed me so much rice mixed with ghee that I have now got indigestion because of eating so much rice with your loving hands. And I could not even refuse. You kept overfeeding me, but I could not refuse you because you were doing it so much out of love. But now what to do? I've got indigestion. So you are a physician. Now give me some herbs so that you can cure this indigestion of mine. And Murari Gupta started feeling very sorry, or he started feeling very bad that he had brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this stage. So in his sorrowful state, he was offering prayers to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he was expressing his regret for doing this. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that Murari Gupta's lota of water was lying in the room. So he said that for the indigestion which has been created by the rice you fed me so lovingly, the cure is actually your own water. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took that water and he drank from that water pot of Murari Gupta. And during those days, it was, you know, people used to follow that so-called caste system very strictly. So there was so much segregation that Brahmin should only eat in Brahmin's house, they should not eat in non-Brahmin's house and all. And Murari Gupta was not a Brahmin. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came from a very high Brahmin lineage. So Murari Gupta started saying, alas, alas, my Lord, why have you drunk water in my house? This is not right because you are a Brahmin and I don't come from a high birth or a high lineage. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then assured him. And obviously we know that the Lord is Bhaktavatsala. So if anything is offered to him with love and devotion, he does not see these criteria of which caste or which varna or ashrama someone is belonging to. And that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lovingly explained to Murari Gupta. During another pastime, Murari Gupta was actually reflecting once. He was thinking that in every incarnation that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken previously, in his incarnation as Lord Ram, or in any other incarnation, he always sends his associates back to Godhead first, and then he himself leaves the world. So he reflected that how when Lord Ram was there, he sent Sita first back to Godhead and then he left this world after some years. Same way in the incarnation of Krishna, Lord Krishna sent all the Yadavas first, all the queens, all the gopis, all the Vrajvasis. After all of them, especially the Yadavas had gone back home, back to Godhead first, then Lord Krishna left this world. So Murari Gupta said that then that is the right order to follow, even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So it is better that I am not alive when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu leaves this world, because I won't be able to bear this separation. In fact, it is said that Murari Gupta was piteously crying when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking sannyas and when the beautiful cascading hair that he had was being shaven off. He was crying like a child. He could not tolerate to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like that. So in the same mood, he was reflecting that I will not be able to tolerate the Lord leaving this world. So it is better I end my life before he winds up his pastimes. And thinking like this, he goes and obtains a dagger, like a sharp knife. And he hides it in his house, waiting for an opportune moment to end his life. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is omniscient. He is all-knowing. So he came to know that Murari Gupta is reflecting on, doing such an activity of committing suicide before he leaves this world. So he came to Murari Gupta's house and very lovingly he called out to him. And he told him, "Oh Murari Gupta, do you have intense love and devotion for me?" And Murari Gupta said, "Yes, my lord, why are you questioning that?" So he said, "Then will you do what I ask you to do?" And he said, "Yes, definitely, my lord, you ask me whatever you want." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, "Can you please bring that dagger, that knife which you are hiding in your house, can you please give it back to me?" And Murari Gupta was astonished that how does the Lord know about this? So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very lovingly chastises him after he gives him back that knife. And he says that how can you even think of doing like this? How can you leave me in this world and go away before me, Murari Gupta? I have come here to enact all my pastimes with all my loving associates. And if you leave before I go from this world, I will not be able to live anymore. So you please stay, be with me in my pastimes and let, naturally whenever the Lord desires you leave this world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing through these, this emotional exchange, how much he is dependent on the love of his devotees and how he wants all his associates to be there with him in his intimate pastimes. So he prevents Murari Gupta from doing this activity. So Murari Gupta, in fact, he left his world on this Kartik Purnima day. And there is a very beautiful temple which the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Math has constructed for him. And that temple is near Balal Digi in Mayapur. So I have never been there, but I don't know if any devotees have been there. But that is a temple which has been built for Murari Gupta in remembrance of him. It's called as Balal Digi in Mayapur. So for the next few minutes, we will dwell on the Kartik Purnima Rasleela which happens today. So obviously, it's a very, very exalted topic. And the Rasleela has been described in the 10th canto. And Srila Prabhupada always said that devotees need to systematically read the first 9 cantos before they start reading Krishna's intimate pastimes in the 10th canto. So, and that is only so that the irrevocable fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that he can do great activities. He can come as Narasimha Dev, he can kill all these demons, he appears as Lord Ram to kill Ravana. So after all these facts are established about Krishna, only then one should dwell on his pastimes in the 10th canto. His pastimes with his cowherd friends, his pastimes with the gopis, because otherwise people can take these pastimes cheaply. Or they might read it too prematurely and that can actually arouse lust in their hearts. So obviously I'm not qualified to speak about this, but because it's the Rasleela actually happened today on Kartik Purnima. So we will dwell on some of the learnings that we learned when we were studying this section in Keshav Prabhu's Bhaktivedanta class. So Rasleela is actually divided in the 10th canto. It has been described in 5 chapters. And that is why it is called as Rasa Panchadhyaya. That means Rasleela is spread over 5 chapters. In the first chapter, just before the Rasleela starts, before that Nanda Maharaj has just been rescued from the waters, like Varuna Dev takes Nanda Maharaj away and he has just been rescued. And after that the Rasleela pastime starts of the Lord. So the first chapter of the Rasleela is entitled as Krishna Calls the Gopis. So in that particular chapter, a beautiful description is given of today, of the Kartik Purnima. So very beautiful description is given of the moon. And very elaborate poetic verses are there of how the moon is actually wanting to take part in Krishna's pastimes. How the moon wants to serve Krishna and enhance his amorous mood so that the Rasleela takes place on that full moon day of Kartik, of the Kartik month. So beautiful description of the moon. There is a very beautiful description of the sky. Again, everything has been personified because these are all spiritual personalities, the moon, the sky, who are trying to help the Lord enact his highest pastime of the Rasleela. There is also a beautiful description given of the Vrindavan forest, how there were the fragrance of different flowers were wafting through the air and into Krishna's nostrils, and they were stirring up his desires to enjoy with the gopis. Again, a description of the Yamuna river is there, that all the lotus flowers were gathering near the banks to again give that fragrance to Lord Krishna. So Lord Krishna's emotions do get stirred when, you know, everyone, the moon, the sky, Vrindavan forest, Yamuna, they all join together to create an ambience for the Lord and his pastimes. And then he decides to call the gopis. And he plays the flute, his Vamsi flute he plays. And it is not like ordinary people of this world playing the flute, where we take out some air from our lungs and, you know, the breath is blown into the flute, the holes of the flute, so that different sounds come out. For Lord Krishna, it was his emotions which had been stirred up by all these entities which were pouring out through his flute. So he was actually just calling out, his love was calling out for the gopis through his flute, it is mentioned. And when he was playing the flute, the notes which reached the gopis' ears and into their hearts, it was as if he was calling each and every gopi personally to come and enjoy with him. So every gopi could hear her own name when that flute was being called. And all the gopis, so that was the first chapter where Krishna calls the gopis. And all the gopis leave everything that they are doing. They were in the midst of cooking, they were in the midst of serving their husbands, serving their fathers, they were in the midst, some of them were already married and had little babies, so they were in the midst of feeding their babies, or some were in the midst of dressing up. They leave everything in an instant and they rush to Krishna, just in response to the call of his flute. And what we learn from here, like a lesson for practicing devotees, is the gopi surrender. Because for a woman, her chastity is most important. For a proper woman, a woman who has been brought up nicely, chastity is the most important for a woman. But in this case, the gopis were ready to be actually called as unchaste for throughout their life just to answer Krishna's call, the loving call which he was giving to them. So they did not care about society. They did not care what their husbands or their in-laws or their parents would tell him. And usually mothers are the most attached to their children. But they did not even care about looking after their children. They just left everything and in an instant they rushed to Krishna. So Prabhupada says that the main lesson, and Prabhupada's disciples who translated those cantos say that the main lesson to learn from us is the gopi surrender. So once they have come there, Krishna actually tells them that, why have you come over here? Krishna is teasing them and testing them. And he's telling that now that you've come here and you've enjoyed the Vrindavan forest, it is now time to go back. Go back to your families, go back to the work that you all were doing. And the gopis start crying piteously. And they are pouring out words to Krishna. They are drawing lines on the ground with their toenails. And they are piteously telling Krishna that after calling us like this in the middle of the night, we have given up everything for your sake, and now you are asking us to return to our homes. We have given that up. If we wanted to stay in our homes, why would we even come over here? So there are beautiful dialogues which are exchanged between Krishna and the gopis, where Krishna is actually testing them. And you know, this pastime is compared to the pastime of the yagnik Brahmin wives. They also actually, you know, even though their husbands were telling them to stop, wait for the yagya to get over, they also gave up their home, their husbands, and they rushed with the food offerings to take to Krishna and Balram in the forest. But after accepting the offerings, Krishna lovingly tells them that now you should go back to your husbands and serve them nicely and also continue serving me. They actually agree and they go back. But in this particular case, the gopis don't go back. They actually chastise Krishna. And they tell him that you called us here, we've given all that up already, we have not come to go back to our homes. So Prabhupada is saying that these pastimes are mainly meant to bring out the exalted nature of the gopis' love. Even the Yajnik Brahmin's wives were pure devotees, but the gopis' love is at a completely different level. So these loving pastimes happen, and then, you know, the Ras Leela briefly starts. And some description is there of the Ras Leela, but it is shown that then the gopis start becoming a little proud. They start thinking that Krishna is only dancing with me, because that is how Krishna was. He was positioned with every gopi. He expands himself into so many billion. 3 billion gopis were there, and he expands himself into so many forms. So every gopi started feeling that tinge of pride in their heart, that Krishna is only dancing with me. And Krishna, one thing which he cannot tolerate is pride in the heart of his devotees. So again, there was a lesson which Krishna was teaching all of us, that if there is even a tinge of pride in, you know, our rendering of devotional service, or you know, in any aspect of service, I can make beautiful garlands, no one can make garlands like me, or I can dress the deity so beautifully, or I can sing so well, or I can give such nice classes. So any aspect of devotional service, if devotees are doing, and little bit pride also creeps into our heart, Krishna does not like that pride. So he takes active steps to smash that pride. And that is what he did with the gopis. So he actually disappeared from their midst. And the gopis start lamenting. They actually start searching for Krishna. So the next chapter is called the Gopis Search for Krishna. And they say that, see that there are two sets of footprints. Wherever, you know, Krishna is going, they are searching in the forest, they are asking the trees, the creepers, they are asking the Yamuna. They are displaying the highest ecstasy of separation from Krishna. And they have gone mad in that ecstasy, and they are asking all these creatures, have you seen, like they are asking the animals, have you seen Krishna, have you seen Krishna, like that. And then they see double set of footprints, and they realize that Krishna is actually with that one gopi who is very dear to Lord Krishna. So the name is not mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami, because he would go into ecstasy, but you know, it is obviously he was with Radharani. And then they see, again they are studying the footprints, and they see that now there is only one set of footprints. And they are saying that that fortunate gopi must now be tired. So Krishna is carrying that gopi in his arms. And then somewhere they see like a half set of footprints. So they say that, oh, now Krishna must be on his tiptoes trying to get some flowers for that particular gopi. So in this way they are, you know, continuously singing glories of the fortune of that one particular gopi. And then, you know, after some time they actually find Radharani also crying over there, because Krishna has left her also and disappeared. And again, this was also to bring out, we'll see what lessons why Krishna did that. But again, Radharani had also become a little bit this thing that Krishna is only with me. So Krishna also wanted to establish that, yes, I do not tolerate any such feelings in any devotee's heart. So along with Radharani, then the gopis are crying piteously, and they are still continuing their search for Krishna. And that brings us to the third chapter of the Rasa Panchadhyay, where it is, that chapter is entitled as the Gopi Geet. So where they are singing glories of Lord Krishna, so beautifully they are singing glories of Lord Krishna. And all those famous verses are there, Tava Kathamritam, all these verses are there, that you have come to, you know, you come down, your holy name and alone can render everyone, you know, they can take them away from this ocean of birth, and that very beautiful songs and verses they are singing in the Gopi Geet. And the Gopi Geet is actually, Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book also, that it is the cry of a devotee for Krishna. He is feeling separation from Krishna, and he is crying out to Krishna to come back in his heart and to come back in his life. And again, the lesson is how we, you know, follow in the footsteps of the gopis, and our chanting comes to that level where we are crying out to Krishna that, oh Krishna, please appear back in my heart. I have lost you over millions of lifetimes. I have lost your association, so you come back to my heart. So that is, you know, the essence of the Gopi Geet. And then the next chapter, the fourth chapter of the Rasa Panchadhyaya, is called as the Reunion, where which shows that Krishna actually is Bhakta Vatsala. He answers, he reciprocates with that earnest call of the gopis to come back, and he reappears within them. And then the whole chapter is about reunion. So there is loving exchanges between the gopis and Krishna. And the gopis are actually, because they are the highest lovers of Krishna, they also had the power, or they also used to take the authority to chastise him. So the gopis actually chastise him in that chapter. And they tell him that, why did you leave us and go away like that? We have completely surrendered our hearts to you. We don't want anything else in this world except your own pleasure. And you just had the audacity to leave us and go away like this, leaving all we gopis who surrendered to your lotus feet so despondent and in such a pitiful state. We would have given up our lives. So they are having this beautiful exchange with Krishna where they are chastising him. They have also placed him back on a throne in the groves of Vrindavan. And they are drinking Krishna's beauty. And it's said that one of the gopis completely captures Krishna in her heart and sits in meditation like a yogi would sit. So all these beautiful verses are described in the Giri Union. And over there Krishna then starts speaking and he explains to them why he disappeared from their midst. So Krishna explains to them that I had disappeared from y'all and the only reason was because I wanted to intensify your love for me. Because when the gopis were in separation, when they were searching for Krishna, it is said that the gopis started enacting pastimes like Krishna. One gopi would become Putna, one gopi would become Krishna, and how Putna was killed by Krishna. Then one would become Shakata Shura, another gopi would take the form of role of Krishna, and how she kicked the other gopi thinking that's a card. So they were enacting all these pastimes. And they were so absorbed in these pastimes that it is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Krishna was present in their midst. He was physically not there, but he was actually present in their midst because of their absorption in his pastimes. And Krishna was actually glorifying that your love for me intensified in that separation which you all had for some time from me. And that was my whole purpose of disappearing, just to intensify your love for me and to increase your attachment for me. And he says also, sometimes I do that. If a person has lots, he doesn't value the things that he has been given to him. But if I take everything away from him and he becomes a beggar after he had lots of opulences, then that person realizes the value and he actually starts yearning back for whatever he had been given. And he said that is exactly the cycle I wanted you all to go through. So you all had me, I disappeared and it increased your attachment and intensified your love for me. And then Krishna speaks the famous verse. He actually glorifies them. He says that there is no match for the love that you all have shown me. There is no match in this world for this love. And he says that I cannot reciprocate with this love at all. In this whole lifetime of Brahma, or in my whole lifetime or forever eternally, I cannot reciprocate with this love which you all have for him, for me. And he speaks the famous verse in that reunion chapter of Na Parayeham. Na Parayeham means I will be forever indebted to you and I will not be able to reciprocate with you. Now we see in terms, for example, Sudama. He took a little flat rice for Krishna. And Krishna reciprocated with him by giving him so many riches, opulences, palaces and all that. But with the gopis he's actually declaring his inability to repay him. In fact, even in the Draupadi's pastime we see. Like once Krishna had cut his finger and Draupadi tears off her sari to quickly tie it around Krishna's finger so that the bleeding stops. And Krishna reciprocates with her by giving her unlimited sari in her hour of need. So Krishna was always able to reciprocate with his devotees. But with the gopis, he declares his helplessness. He says that I cannot reciprocate with your love. So let your love for me be your only glory. Let that be, you know, the glory which is spread all over the world. Because na parayaham, I am forever indebted to you. And I am declaring that I cannot repay your love for me. So then the gopis, Prabhupada explains over there that the gopis become eternally glorious through that pastime of searching for Krishna, of crying out in love for Krishna, singing the gopi geet. Krishna makes the gopis eternally glorious. He spreads their glories all over the world and he establishes the fact that this Rasleela which he has with the gopis is not some cheap pastime which is happening out of lust, but it is the highest symptom of surrender of the gopis to Krishna and it is the highest manifestation of their love for him. And then finally, the last chapter of the Rasa Panchadhyaya is the actual Rasleela which takes place. And there are different parts in the Rasleela. They first go around in the forest, roaming around with each other, enjoying pastimes with each other. Then they have the Rasleela. And the Rasleela goes on for one Brahma's night, one whole night of Brahma, which is trillions and trillions of years. So I think one Brahma's night is many thousands of yuga cycles, which that whole Rasleela goes for. And then they become tired, so they have some water pastimes in the Yamuna. Then they again have Rasleela. And then they enjoy some pastimes in the groves of Vrindavan. So the Rasleela also has different aspects or different stages to it. So the final chapter is Rasleela. And that is how this whole Rasa Panchadhyay concludes. And this whole pastime happened on this particular day of Kartik Purnima. So today the most auspicious Damodar month is starting. Like I was mentioning, we start offering candles from tomorrow. But actually Kartik month starts today. And it is so auspicious. It is such an auspicious month. So we were discussing about Radharani's glories and how she was so special. So Radharani is the presiding deity of this particular month. And there are so, it is described in different Puranas and, you know, by different acharyas that even a little devotional service that is done during Kartik month gives thousands and thousands of times of benefit. Especially if that devotional service is done in Vrindavan. But not all of us can physically be present in Vrindavan. I know many devotees travel to the holy dhams during this auspicious month. But for people who don't travel, Prabhupada has called even Melbourne temple as Vrindavan. It's non-different from Vrindavan. So any devotional service which we render over here gets multiplied by 1,000 times. It is so easy in this month to access the mercy of Radharani and to access Krishna's mercy by praying to Radharani. So it is said there are a few things which if we do in this month, it gives us eternal benefit in our spiritual lives. So one of the things is mentioned is offering ghee lamp every day to Lord Damodar, the form of Lord Damodar without fail. Also doing some extra rounds if we can. Like, you know, if we are doing 16 rounds, doing 18 or 20. Some devotees take a vow of chanting 24 rounds every day. So any extra that we do during this month gets multiplied by thousands of times. And it helps us give that boost in our devotional service. It is said that Prabhupada says that all other engagements and activities should be given up during Kartik month. The whole focus should be how to intensify our devotion to Lord Krishna and to Radharani during this month and to derive maximum benefit. So as part of that, Prabhupada also recommends that, you know, devotees take a daily vow of reading some pages of Bhagavatam or some pages of Bhagavad Gita. Even it is recommended to read Upadeshamrita or the Nectar of Devotion every day. It gives so much benefit. Reciting the Sikshashtakam every day. Also doing parikrama, like, you know, do parikrama or going circumambulating the temple, circumambulating Tulsi Maharani, offering Tulsi Maharani lamp every day, worshipping her. Also following brahmacharya. So for grahasthas, it is very important that in this particular month, they follow complete brahmacharya, complete celibacy. And it is said that it is also very powerful to eat once a day in Kartik month. For people who can do that, you know, in the Puranas, it is mentioned, their fame and their glory spread all over the world. But for devotees, it is more to control the tongue, like eat once a day so that we can dedicate more time to devotional activities of hearing, reading and chanting. So these are some of the glories of Kartik month and of Murari Gupta and Ras Leela. It's already over time, so we'll end here. Did anyone have any questions, comments, corrections?
I don't know how to thank you because you have been so much information about Krishna and thank you. You have been an overview of Rasa Leela. In fact, you have demonstrated Prabhupada's intense love for Lord Krishna, which can move the mountains and then what to do then. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Anything else? We'll end the class here. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.